listening to You, Me, Them, Everybody. My name is Brandon Weatherby, and I'm with my friend Chuck Seba.
Hello.
Who is a friend in an odd way, because apparently I've known of you for, I think, 7 years.
7 years.
I think we had our first long, like, our first conversation for more than, like, two sentences about, I don't know, 6 months ago.
Yeah, I think so.
And I think we became officially friends. I don't know if I'm breaching anything here, is when we played a tournament of Blades of Steel.
I agree.
At
your
apartment.
That was a moment. I kind of felt the cheeseburger. Cheeseburger was the moment.
Oh, no. I think that was the following night, wasn't it?
Was it the following night?
I think it was. I know. Blades of Steel.
It means nothing.
That was good. Blades of Steel, I picked my favorite Chicago team as of right now, because the Bears are out, the Chicago Blackhawks, and you did not pick the Blackhawks, right, though you are from Chicago. Do you know what team you were?
I went with Minnesota, and even though they wear pink, they're...
Pink and Blades of Steel.
Right, pink and Blades of Steel. Yeah. They're just stunningly deadly. They can...
I'm still going with the Hawks, man. I got to go with the Hawks, because they have the coolest uniform. It's all black and red, and their faces are red.
But they suck at fighting on that game.
I think
they suck at fighting, and they're just a little slow.
We had like 8 fights, and I think I won one. And I'm pretty sure you were like on the phone when you won, when I won that one. So I'm very happy about that. I mentioned New York because you have recently moved to New York.
I did in June.
Why?
June of 08.
And you moved to New York for what?
Moved to New York for various reasons.
Let's be honest. Chicago is the greatest city in the world, and that's not a joke.
It is. It's an amazing blend of America, so to speak.
I agree. It's the American city.
It's just a tremendous kind of atmosphere with both people and history. And it's a city that has slowly begun to lose its history.
How so?
In the sense of, I think neighborhoods are changing without recognizing their past, which is bound to happen.
All right,
it's not necessarily wholly negative, but...
Yeah. Okay, so when you think of, let's say, Pilsen, the neighborhood of Pilsen in Chicago on the south side, what do you think of?
Pilsen only came into my mind when I was in college. So
that's
it's
fine.
Going to be predominantly known as either an artist's neighborhood,
okay,
or an overtly Hispanic.
Okay, so do you think it's a shame that all these artists are moving into Pilsen and now it's not as much of a Hispanic neighborhood as it was once?
Well, see, this is my ignorance. I thought it was the other way around.
You thought it was an artist neighborhood, and then it was a Hispanic neighborhood.
Right. It's
no.
It's growing more of the Hispanic.
Opposite. Well, my point is, the reason why I mentioned Pilsen is everyone that you think of Pilsen, usually you think of it as a Hispanic neighborhood.
Right.
And the artists are gentrifying the neighborhood, and they're ruining the neighborhood. But most people don't realize that it was once a Polish neighborhood, like 100%
right.
Polish. So when you say like neighborhoods are losing their history, I just think it's a cycle. It's inevitable.
Maybe so. I mean, it's definitely a cycle, but I think that there's, a certain loss of the past. There is a certain changing of the makeup of the areas. Like, look, for instance, at Lincoln Square.
Lincoln Square is it's on the northwest side. It's off the it's at the Western and Lawrence Brown Line stop, and it was predominantly German.
Predominantly German. Cute little.
Still is cute.
It's a cute neighborhood. But it was a very nice neighborhood that had all of the traditional German stores.
Mm-hmm.
You can get inexpensive, great deli meats.
They still have that deli. It's still there.
They do. But you can't deny that the neighborhood did look stunningly different. There was the old Fannie Mae store in the corner, which turned into a T-Mobile store or some sort of...
Yeah.
I guess the very essence is that the neighborhood has changed. There
yeah.
are these odd archways and
but
things that don't necessarily, while they may be modernizing it, seeing things, and not to jump on the anti-corporate bandwagon,
it's fine.
But seeing Potbellies move in there, and
yeah.
or even seeing Potbellies and Jamba Juice on Belmont.
Yes.
Which, growing up in high school, Belmont was like where you went to see different things.
Speaking of, let's talk about that area, because what suburb did you grow up in?
I grew up in Lake County, which
yeah.
is about...
It's northwest of the city, or
northwest,
just north?
Northwest.
Okay. How far from the city were you? You couldn't take, like, the L here, right?
No, but I could take the Metro.
You could take the Metro.
It's like an hour
what
Metro
did you,
ride.
Did you do that in the summer and the weekends when you were in high school?
we would actually drive down for shows.
Okay, when you say shows, you're probably talking about Metro.
Or Fireside. More Fireside than Metro.
To see punk bands or...
Punk ska bands, yeah.
Okay. And Fireside no longer has shows. Well, they technically do, but they're no longer booked by MP shows, and it's once a week.
Right.
And now the bands that are more art... Let's just... Like, they're blatantly artist bands.
Right.
And they're not pop or ska or whatever. And Metro has not been booking as many all-ages shows because I don't think there's money in that anymore.
Right.
But the neighborhood in Lakeview, you're completely right. Now there's a Potbelly's there. And Clark's is actually bigger. And they have a bar now.
Clark's After Dark. It's
Clark's
like...
After Dark, which is very odd. And there's a Jamba Juice. And back when we were in high school, it was like there's the Belmont Army Surplus Store.
Which those guys always sucked.
The Belmont Music Army Surplus Store?
I never had a good experience with anyone there.
I don't think I've ever bought anything.
I would go there for shoes because they actually had nice shoes, but then
yeah,
they would never help you.
I would go down there. I think I'd bought a lot of CDs from Disco Round or Music Recyclery,
yes,
which is now closed.
Right.
And all these stores are closed now, and it's really odd going back. And I don't know where I'm going with this.
No, or even Muskie's not being there.
Oh, like, but Muskie's burned down.
Did it burn down?
Burned down. Muskie's was in the corner of Sheffield and Belmont, and that burned down. It was boarded up for about 6 months. Now it's a Bank of America.
Right.
Which is really sad because it's next to the Vic, which is a pretty decent mid-sized theater. They have the Bruin View, which is pretty cool if you like
right.
beer and shitty movies, and it's good.
I mean, I think that there are areas that will never change, and areas being, like, I don't see... Like Halsted and Addison changing dramatically. I think if anything,
do
it's going
that's because
to be.
That, do you think that's going to maintain a gay neighborhood?
Because it's
called Boys Town for those.
Right.
That
I think it's slotted towards that.
And okay.
I think it's like that's an area that's celebrated for that specific group.
What about like Andersonville, where it's like half Swedish and half gay community?
See that? I don't know. I mean, I can't honestly.
You don't
have
think
any
that, okay
intelligent. Without selling, you know.
That's fine. Well, I just think the point is, if there's money, it's not going to change drastically. If the rents are going to stay the same, they're going to attract the same people. But if it's cheaper rent, you're going to attract the artist type and stuff.
Right, sure.
And I really shouldn't talk shit because thanks for the artist type, I have a cheap apartment. And
right. I mean, I guess the main thing is to not see areas of the city lose their identity. To not see. As much as I love a Potbelly sandwich, now that I live in New York, I miss that thing all so much. And the fact that I come back and immediately that's one of the first things I eat.
Do you really?
I love Potbelly.
Which sandwich do you get?
I alternate between a wreck and a turkey.
I love the wreck.
I mean, the wreck is just magic.
I think it's odd. For those that don't know, the wreck is pretty much every type of meat they have.
Right.
But I can never pinpoint any meat I'm eating when I'm eating that sandwich. I think I just order because I think I'm getting the most for my dollar.
The beautiful thing is that when you eat it, you're just eating a wreck.
That's true. That's definitely true.
I mean, it's
true.
Like that's how you could characterize
that is
the
long,
flavor.
That's the Long Island iced tea of sandwiches.
Right. I mean, and again, you know, Potbelly is a Chicago.
Is it? Oh, yeah,
I
that's
thought it
right.
Was.
It
the
is.
One on,
the
on
one on Lincoln.
Lincoln
in Lincoln Park was the first Potbelly's.
So I guess I don't find that much offense with Potbelly's, say, as much as...
Jamba Juice?
The Jamba Juices... Or trying to think, or just seeing, you know, an American Apparel in every neighborhood.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, whereas New York has the boroughs, Chicago has the neighborhoods, and to
yeah.
slowly watch the neighborhoods just become so commercial. I mean, to see Wicker Park from what Wicker Park was when I moved to Chicago.
What year was that?
It was in 2001.
Okay.
Middle of 2001.
So like 7-8 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
When to see Wicker Park then. To see what it is now,
yeah.
I mean, it's completely. There's a bank every
yeah. They got
two
rid of
storefronts.
The best coffee shop in the city, and now it's a bank.
Right. So I mean, I think it's sad to see that that go the route that it is.
Seeing things like that, was it easier to leave to go to New York?
Definitely. I mean, it was easier to kind of just be like, well, it's not, you know, to be like that crotchety young man and say things aren't the way they used to be. And I also enjoy. Being in a, and this may sound odd, but like being in a city where I have no attachment, where I can't watch it in a sense decay
yeah.
to an extent and just be like, oh, okay. And like not really being sad that X building is being
yeah.
knocked down. I mean, if it's a beautiful building, it's one thing, but like, you know, seeing a strip of land change dramatically.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that very person was someone that I rejected for so many years.
What, the New York person?
No, the person that would just move, you know, the transient in Chicago that would just stay here, you know, live in the... Granted, I was from the suburbs.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of contradictions here. You know, the person that would come here and not really take on an identity of being in Chicago and taking on what it's like to be a Chicagoan.
And well, you consider yourself a Chicagoan.
I do.
So, what does that mean? Besides being crotchety and young, what does that mean? Because I'm pretty sure that would actually describe a lot of Chicagoans.
I think it's... there's a certain humble nature to it. I mean, there's, you know... There's a sense of community in Chicago and a sense of care for people and your neighborhood and people.
Did you feel that when you were here?
I did. I mean, I always felt, especially when I lived in, when I first moved to Chicago for 2 years, I lived in Lincoln Square.
Oh, yeah.
So that was particularly hard watching that change. I mean, there's like a little small panini shop that was awesome. It's called like Rocco's, and it was a phenomenal place. And, you know, now I think it's, I don't even know, it's probably a car wash. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's sad seeing those things go.
Yeah.
And so I think having the sense of community, which I did feel then, because you know, the great thing about Chicago that you don't have in every city is you'll be walking on the street and people say hello to you.
Okay, I work outside. I'm outside 8 hours a day walking around. And I have headphones on at all times because I don't want to have to say hi to everyone.
Well, that's, you know, I mean...
Does that make me a bad person?
That doesn't make you, any less of a Chicagoan either. But the experience that a person can have walking on the street and simply asking someone a question or asking for directions or holding a door, as, you know, ridiculous as that may
sound. You don't see that in New York?
People just... They need to. They just want to get someplace. That's like their goal is A to B.
So you,
anything in from my experience already.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't.
So it's not a stereotype.
I don't think so, and I think that I think New Yorkers would readily admit that. You know, that's just the atmosphere of the city. I mean, people are just too busy to really give a shit. You know, really care.
That is very sad to me.
I mean, I think that's, you know, that goes back to being a Chicagoan, is caring for other people, making sure they're okay. I mean, not bending over backwards to the nth degree, but, you know, caring for people, getting to know people, and not necessarily getting to know someone to kind of either hedge yourself above someone else or to get to know someone, not just that way you can be, better than someone else. Having... Yeah. A sense of care to know someone.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the positives then of New York. You're glad that you moved.
Definitely.
What are some of the main reasons?
That I moved to New York?
No, not that you moved, that why you're glad that you moved. Because you didn't move
great.
You didn't move to run away from something. You moved for a positive, and you didn't move out of desperation. You know what I mean? It's not
right.
Like you had to escape the law or you couldn't pay off a debt or something.
Right.
So let's do the positives. Maybe we'll feel better about New York after this.
Well, you know, I like New York. You know, the positives for moving is I had always lived in the Chicago area.
Yeah.
And it was nice to, you know, completely go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And, you know, be someone from the Midwest living on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And completely... understanding, and it sure has been a crash course in East Coast etiquette. Well, everything from the job search
Let's go back to the job shirts, but the etiquette. Talk about the etiquette for a second.
The New York etiquette?
Yeah, or the East Coast etiquette, I should say. I've never thought that you'd have to adjust your etiquette if you moved to a different city. I'm serious. I didn't think of that. I thought you might have to readjust, like, travel plans, but not etiquette.
A main difference is, you know, New York, when you talk to someone in New York, and this is not all cases, but in a lot of cases, people are trying to find out what you do so that way they can understand, this is grand generalization, understand what you do to size you up to see where you sit in the big, where you sit on the island, so to speak.
Okay.
And
give me an example.
Well, I think that you know, when just even talking to people that I work with, or people I know that work in the corporate side of New York, you know, yeah. definitely know when they are going out to a party, you know, either work party or something like that, speak of knowing that someone's just trying to find out where they are in the pecking order and how that can help them out.
So it's
which
more
I think is part of the machine of the city to be
like, know, climbing the ladder,
people, right? To climb the ladder and so forth, and seeing, you know, where you fit and where you don't. I remember one of the funniest moments I ever had in New York was, this is before I moved there.
Okay,
I had gone to a Council on Foreign Relations meeting, and it was Senator Sam Nunn was giving a speech on nuclear deterrence.
Okay,
and it was in front of all these. You know, big Council on Foreign Relations people, you know, Maureen Dowd was there, so it was a whole big thinkers camp, and I luckily got to go. And I remember walking out, and this gentleman, you know, motioned for me to go over, and I didn't know anyone there. I didn't go with anyone. I was by myself.
Okay.
And he comes over to me, and he's like, oh, what do you do? And at the time, I was working at a boutique marketing agency in Chicago. And, you know, I told him what I was doing. And as I was talking to him, he literally just started to walk away.
Really?
After he'd found out what I, you know, where I was from, what I was doing. He just literally checked out and was walking down the stairs.
That's one of the most ballsiest, meanest things I've ever heard.
Yeah, no, it was pretty, I was like,
did he say bye, or did he just literally, like, did he back away? Did he pretend to keep listening and then walk away?
He just kind of started stepping down the stairs a little quicker than I was
like,
walking.
Did he, like, pretend to get a phone call or anything?
No, I mean, it wasn't even, you know, there was no question of, let's talk later. It was, he was just gone. And so, you know, that was an early introduction, and even, you know, people that I know and that I've talked to for jobs and so forth. It's, you know, you have to be very overly cordial in moments where you would not expect. And that means down to, right, that sounds odd.
Yeah, it sounds like you should be brass. And
well, they want you to be brass, but there also needs to be this sort of, you know, thank someone to the high end for their help.
Okay, so in order
if
to,
it means a connection or so forth.
Okay.
Which is, you know, there's definitely no problem with.
That's very odd.
Thanking people, but it's a certain sort of.
They seem to be completely contradictory.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you were at a very smart conference here. You're foreign relations is not like the normal person's fun afternoon.
Right.
Why were you there? You're interested in this.
Right. It's a general interest, and that was. In a sense, part of moving to New York was to either get involved with the Council on Foreign Relations. Thought I had it in there.
Yeah?
I didn't.
Things change.
It obviously wasn't the gentleman walking down the stairs.
Yes, obviously.
But I wanted to take that path or be on the path to moving to Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Which is the city that I'm immensely attracted to in a weird, weird way.
Why?
It's just a very, I found it to be a very profound city in that it is kind of a power base, because the whole, I mean, obviously the federal government is there,
mm-hmm.
and not only that, but it's such an intense area of interest, and there is such, you know, so much going on culture-wise for us.
What do you want to do once you're in with D.C., or what's the goal for New York for jobs?
The goal
not now, not like tomorrow, but overall.
Overall, I mean, the job would be to be involved in a think tank of sort.
Okay.
And be an analyst and be kind of research and crunching things together.
What interests you about this?
Like it's the impact that, you know, the interconnectedness of sorts.
Don't worry.
To that it all has.
Okay.
You know, everything from world economy to the way that plays into a state's decision to act a certain way, or the way history plays into how a state will.
So you
want to
be a puppet
state.
Master. In a good way. Right. Hopefully in a good way.
Right, definitely.
How do you get involved in that? I mean, you and I went to the same college, we have the same degree. and we both have awful jobs right now.
Right.
I mean, I'm not knocking your job, but it's not a career job, nor is mine. But they're paying the bills, so that's good. But how do you become part of a think tank? What's the route?
From my experience so far, it is knowing the right people.
Could you get in one now if you met the right people with your education, or will you need grad school and further?
You don't need grad school.
Really?
You don't need grad school, believe it or not. I mean, a lot of people have grad school going into them. But in most cases, and what's been so difficult for me getting into it is DePaul University is, you know, it's not the bare bones school, but a lot of those think tanks are looking for the Harvards, the Yales.
Of course, of course.
You know, and that's a grand disadvantage.
Yes.
I've learned very easy, you know, very early on with the East Coast is not having that name attached to my name is oddly harmful.
I think it's odd that in this city, if you go to DePaul, you could be mayor.
It's true. DePaul...
Be like possibly the most powerful mayor in the entire country.
Right.
But not anywhere else.
Right. It's just kind of... I don't know if there's a general misunderstanding of DePaul or a reality check for DePaul, but I think that it is odd how DePaul, there's a certain attitude of being... from DePaul in Chicago.
It's not a good thing, usually.
It's an interesting thing, I would say.
It's definitely interesting.
I mean, you have people that graduate from DePaul and have the highest of opinion of themselves. Then you have those that just kind of saw it as big kid high school.
Yeah.
Which I always found to be very interesting.
Where did you stand on it? Or were you in the middle?
For DePaul, I mean, it was very... I always felt that it was what you made it.
I agree.
And
completely.
I could have made it 1,000 times better, but I was too busy trying to figure out outside of DePaul how to make life happen.
I'm with you completely on that. I don't like the people that just knock it,
right,
for the sake of knocking. And I feel like if you went to Harvard or I went to a community college, it like you said, it doesn't matter. It depends on what you do.
Right.
And that's like the most general thing to say. And
right.
Sorry about that.
I mean, it's kind of. You know, not to be ridiculous, but you know, you invest time in college, and you either invest it in the right stock, be it the school, or if the school has nothing outside of school, but I kind of feel investing it outside of the school, did, was the wrong track.
Are you glad you went there?
I am.
Do you wish you would have maybe gone to a different, like outside of Chicagoland in college?
I think that it was perfect for me at the time.
Okay.
And I wouldn't, you know, based on that, I wouldn't have been prepared to, you know, go elsewhere.
So did it help you travel east or no?
No.
Okay.
I don't think it was part of
the
East Coast move.
So you want to be part of a think tank and have a high profile, not high profile, but a high power job where you're actually influencing lives.
I mean, eventually,
yes.
To take a step beyond the think tank, I would like to work at the State Department as a Foreign Service Officer.
What is this Foreign Service Officer do?
Foreign Service Officer works, they have many different, they have economic, and they have political Foreign Service Officer. Political Foreign Service Officer basically works with the community in a foreign land, and kind of is the eyes and ears, so to speak. That's a very broad way to look at it.
Okay.
Eyes and ears of what's happening in the area. They take the information, put it together, report it back to the embassy, and in a sense recommend policy.
So is it more like a census taker collecting information? Is it more like a spy, or is it more like a community organizer? How are you getting information?
Without being cynical, I think every State Department official could be safely called a spy in certain ways. I mean, you know, while you are representing the largest, or the most powerful country in the world, I think that, you know, you have your purpose is to glean information and get what needs to get done for your country, for the United States of America. This isn't, you know, it's not a time to sit around and talk about how great things can be.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a very explicit job of working for the United States government.
Where would you want to work then? It sounds like you'd have to be overseas.
Yes.
Where? First world countries, third world countries. What? Everywhere? Do they have these places? Do they have jobs like this in everywhere? Or is it just where our image is poor, or where there's human aid crises?
It's every crises. Embassy. I mean, it's
so it's
every
around the world.
It's around the world. I mean, okay. they have. I mean, they basically are the. I mean, they're basically diplomats. They're working, like I said, working with the community, the leaders of the community, to find out what's happening, what interest is of the United States, how the United States can help them, how they can help the United States, bring the information back, giving it to the embassy so the ambassador can form policy for that country to send it back to the State Department.
So it kind of sounds like product development for the U.S.
Sure, that's perfect.
Where would you want to go ideally?
Ideally, someplace in Asia. I mean,
really?
China would be excellent, but any
in Beijing or in a small province or
Beijing would be great. I mean, that would be
interesting. Why Beijing? Or why China?
I mean, obviously China is the, I think, obviously, is the most interesting state for the future.
Okay.
I mean, everything from the development of the population to the continual development of their government to where, in a sense, finance is headed, who could potentially be part of the larger financial institution after all is said and done with the fallouts and so to speak, as well as technological development. You know, you have all of the Malaysia or Singapore or Taiwan. While they are developing things, they are the engine that basically manufactures and creates everything. So a lot of the innovation's happening there.
If you take this job, you don't want to just rest on your laurels. You want to go where it's the most interesting, most exciting, most potentially big place possible to make a change. Not to make a change, but to learn.
Right. To learn and, in a sense, be part of the whole grand unfolding.
But as of now, you're working
at the Republic.
At the Republic.
I'm working at a certain... I work for a state of sort.
And I'm not knocking you. I'm not laughing at you. I think it's very honorable that you got the hell out of a city to move to the biggest city in the U.S. You're not happy. I'm not saying you're unhappy, but you're at the Republic.
Professionally because, unhappy.
Yeah, you're professionally unsatisfied, I should say. How is that? I mean, you were working in a boutique. You were kind of using. You were working in a. Sorry, could you say it again?
A boutique marketing agency.
So you were using your degree.
Right.
You were using your mind. I'm not saying you're not using your mind now, but you're like folding sweaters and stuff.
Right.
To be fair, I'm not using my mind at my job either, so we're equally wasting away here. But how is that going from a good, not to say the other one was good, but a stable job where you're using your mind to retail?
It's been awful, but good.
Okay. The awful should be pretty obvious.
Right. The awful is obvious. I mean, the awful is being told you leave at 11 and leaving at 12:30 a.m. The awful is, you know, helping someone just find out what someone's daughter or friend's favorite color is when you don't even know the person.
Yeah.
I mean, so just very odd, odd occurrences that pop up.
Let's do the positives here.
Right. I mean, the good is, you know, not to be cheesy again, but, you know, the people you meet.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the big fears of a job like that is not being in a sense, the right environment. But I have been lucky enough, and hopefully they're not gone by the time I get back there. But there is a certain, you know, backbone of people that you have that are in a similar place than you.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's comforting.
Yeah.
To have, you know, for instance, one of my friends there was a medic in the Iraq War.
Wow.
And he came back here, and he was just going to get a job as a paramedic.
Okay.
And there were no jobs available.
Yeah.
And then he was trying to get into something with the Health Department of New York, and that's not necessarily working out, or Jesus. Maybe it's working out. So you have someone that... I was working at a marketing agency.
Yeah.
He was over in Iraq with soldiers
that were
his
life and
dying, and now he's folding a shirt. So he's a good barometer to be like.
That's true.
You know, like at least I'm not looking at the world through those eyes. But it's a good humbling experience at a certain extent.
It.
I mean, it's something that you realize, you get back in touch with people. I think one cancer of being a professional is you kind of lose touch with what it's like to be shit.
It's a good point.
I mean, you just kind of, you know, you have weekends off and you can easily get time off. I mean, more or less get time off for holidays.
Yeah.
You more or less are insulated with a decent income. You forget what it's like to be treated like complete shit. And not that you should.
No, no. I
be treated like shit, but it helps you from treating other people.
Everyone should work at least 2 years in customer service. That should be our, like, military service.
I was going to say the same thing.
Do you feel that this might actually help you for when you're doing your job that you want to have, your career job, being able to relate to people like this?
Definitely. And, you know, the specific location that I'm at is a very international hub. Not that I'm, you know.
Let's just say where you're at. You're
at Rockefeller Center.
When you see the tree, you're at the corner. You're like, could you see the tree from your store?
I can't, but if I go upstairs, I'm looking. I'm like right by it.
Yeah, so you watch 30
I'm actually
Rock.
Right by
they might see you.
Right, I'm actually right by the ice rink.
Yeah. So everyone in the world knows exactly where you work.
Right, so I mean, it's not like I can, I mean, I'm sure you could find people that don't know the John Hancock Center.
Exactly.
But,
which is a shame.
Which is a shame.
It's beautiful.
But you can't say Rockefeller and people be like, what?
It's all Tina Fey, man.
It's true. She made. It's she's delightful. Made New York.
Yeah, if it wasn't for her, it'd just be a speck on a map.
Right. But will it help me in the future? I mean, I believe so. I mean, I think it's, you know, when I got into the professional world, I admittedly was kind of, you know, ready to relax and, you know, enjoy the ride.
Do you feel that moving to New York and switching to a retail job and doing this makes you want to settle down more, or does it make you realize, or to make you think that, like, there's no rush in all this? Because a lot of the people I know that are already married and our age, and you're 25 or 26?
25.
I'm 26. We're relatively, like, in a lot of places, we should be married.
Right.
We should be settled down and all this stuff, but the more people I know that are more artistic or, like, doing jobs that aren't, like, straight out of college, you don't care about that as much. I find that somewhat comforting. The question is really, now that you've moved, do you feel like there's a time limit on this, or as long as you're trying to do something big, it's okay?
I think that, you know, finding progress is good, but I also think that, and this is a certain fault that I've had to deal with, I also think that when you're in a shit job, you know, doing things outside of what would be considered your profession.
Yeah.
You know, that's the ultimate progress. I mean, you can...
Having a kid and, like...
No. Like having... like, doing things like writing for websites or writing for a magazine on the side that has nothing to do with your job. Because I find that people rely too much on the career as being their... Not only their identity to... Not only their identity, but to also, you know, this is all I can do.
Yeah.
You know, when I go in from 9 to 5, I'm doing this and that defines me. But I think that a larger issue is you do 9 to 5 because you have to do 9 to 5.
Yeah.
That's just the great lot that we're all given.
Yeah.
But I think that understanding, you know, what it is, if you're lucky to know what you love and can find something to do with it, be it writing or anything of that artistic nature, which I think everyone has some sort of ability, you know, that's the barometer of success.
Okay.
And that's something that I've kind of fallen flat on with writing and being involved in that format. But I think that's what ultimately helps you move forward. And so long as I can start working on this better, so long as that's moving forward, I just got to do the 9 to 5.
That's good.
No matter what it is.
A good message to end on. Thank you.
No problem.
Next time you're back in Chicago, you got to come by. We'll talk about soul music.
Definitely.
Because you have the best 45 collection I've ever seen, besides the one dude from Delilah's, who I'm pretty sure you know who I'm talking about. He's got a giant pompadour. It is a soul night there. It's amazing.
You know,
yeah,
I appreciate that, but I won't.
I give it up to you. You only have about four boxes of 45s, but every single one is a gem, and it makes me jealous. So on that note, you've been listening to You, Me, Them, Everybody. I got to plug a show. It's the first time I'm plugging my band. We're playing January 2nd at Cal's Liquors, which is in the Lube. It's 400 South Wells on Friday. And to close the show, we're going to have Daniel Knox doing a feeder song. So, yeah, that's it. Thanks for listening.
Stop.